Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to Hometown Glory, the Spurs and Culture podcast. Today, our podcast dad, Charlie, sadly can't make it, but we have Ash, Billy and Rosa on. Of course, on the last pod, we were over the moon with our 5-0 win, which of course means we had to lose the next game. Saturday, we lost 3-2 to Manchester United and a storming Ronaldo performance. But we're going to try to not be a yo-yo podcast to match our ridiculous yo-yo club. We'll try our best to keep things upbeat as we cover United. I'll fill you in on my drama trying to watch the game. We'll talk Brighton and West Ham, two games this week, Spurs women, and we'll have culture picks as well. Right, United. Rosa, what went wrong?
Ultimately, it was just one of those games where I feel like you could have just watched any of our games at Old Trafford over the last like 30 years instead of that one. And it just would have been the same. Like, Barb, what about like four games there over the last however many years have just gone like that? Well, we've played quite well, I would say, sort of some nice passing, but ultimately just no killer instinct, pretty flimsy, just some hilarious defending. And we're kind of sucker punched, really. Do you know what was the most frustrating thing for me, I think, is I'm going to try and be calm about this. And I feel like where I am at the moment is I don't think our defeats, like, we're not as bad as our defeats make us look, but we're also not as good as our victories make us look. That's kind of where so I'm trying not to be too much on the roller coaster. But what was so frustrating was I think they clearly set a trap for us, but it was like the most obvious trap in the world. Like, it might have just as well said, this is a trap, don't walk into it. And we did. Like, they didn't come for us in the way that we thought they would, right? So we couldn't play them like we played City. So they did that to us and we just walked straight into it. So we just tried some kind of nice passing and then ultimately they just hit us on the break. And when you've got Ronaldo, and especially a Ronaldo that you're not even trying to close down, like, a loss is inevitable, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, Dyer, was it Dyer on the first one, not closing down Ronaldo and giving him a yard or two of space was insane. 37-year-old
inexcusable.
Ronaldo, 37 years old, almost exactly the same age as me. I think most frustrating for me was that United didn't seem to actually play that well, apart from obviously Ronaldo, and yet they still beat us.
Their defence is terrible. So just quick, their defence was terrible. Like, the fact that, they conceded a penalty and gave away an own goal. Like, if we'd just been sharper, but we never are there. It's so, so, so frustrating.
Ash, who did you think was good for us and who was bad?
There weren't many good people. Kulusevski, who I've slagged off on every podcast I've been on, was really good, and someone called me out on Twitter about that. So this is my formal apology about Kulusevski and like judging him very quickly, because I'm clearly very wrong. So I thought he was probably the best player. Thought the defense was pretty poor. Region in particular was very bad, I thought. You mentioned Dyer not coming out for the first goal. That was poor. I thought Bentancur wasn't great, even though he's been brilliant so far. And like, we just didn't control the game. And even with that being said, we still had chances. Son had a chance. I thought Son especially was poor. I feel like I'm naming the entire team, but yeah, Son was completely out of sorts. And it was just a really strange game. Like, we weren't really awful, but we just like weren't nearly good enough to like beat them. And they, like Rosa said, they barely showed up and like still got the 3 points, which is very frustrating. The second goal in particular we conceded like straight after scoring was just so, so poor. Was it Region who played everyone onside? I can't remember. Yeah. Yeah, just very poor defending. So yeah, it's a weird, like, it kind of feels, I mean, not to be too downbeat, but that kind of felt like the signal of top four, like potentially being like done for good. And yeah, we've got to just hope like we can just like get through the rest of the season and like give Conte like the funds. I'm still really hopeful when we've got the right managers. So, yeah, it'll be fine, I'm sure.
Yeah, I thought Reguilon had a particularly bad game, and Son, that was his worst game of the season probably. And he's had some pretty quiet games. Yeah, he was genuinely quite terrible, Son. Ash, you just touched on it then. Arsenal won yet again at the weekend. And United have chalked up another 3 points, obviously. Billy, it looks like top four's done, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. It'll take a miracle at this point. You know, stranger things have happened. I think it's interesting because I think this set of games, which I seem to have been saying for a while now, I think there's quite a good chance that we could be back to where we were at the beginning of the week. And the fact that we should beat Brighton and Arsenal should lose to Liverpool technically. But the thing is, I just don't back us now to go on a string of like 5 or 6 wins in a row. So forget about, you know, getting 3 points on Arsenal here and there. We just don't have the consistency to put in 5 or 6 wins in a row, which is what Arsenal have done. And they've taken themselves from being, you know, behind us when we had games in hand, to now they're above us and they've got a game in hand and they're above us quite comfortably as well. And the thing is, like, the chase for the top four is really poor this year. Like, no one is really looking that good. And we're sort of allowing Arsenal to sort of do it. And they're not doing anything other than what should be expected of them. They're, like, they're beating teams which they should be beating, and they haven't beaten a decent side for a little while. But that's the sad thing about it, is we haven't made them do anything more than that. We don't like challenging them to do anything more than that. So I don't think we've got it in ourselves to do anything about it. What I'm sort of praying for now, and this is how sad life becomes, is that maybe Man United will, because that's the sort of all we've got left, which is like sad. But I just don't think, you know, I think with the last 7 or 8 games in a row, we've won one, lost one, won one, lost one. We're just not going to put a run together, which is a real shame, because the top four race was realistic a few games ago. But now it's just, I think it's too much for us. I really do, which is a shame. But like Ash said, we've got the right manager. We're just going to have to stick with it this season. Hope that it gets better in summer. Hope that we back the man. Sort of some Kane quotes today that sound like he's pretty happy as long as Conte is happy. Which is all that we are as fans as well. So as long as we back Conte in summer, we'll be back, hopefully.
I think, Ash, sorry, what were you going to say?
No, I was going to just say, like, I think, and I hate to say this, but, like, Arsenal have put together a really impressive run, and they, like, really backed, like, the manager in the summer. And I think, like, we were a better side, like, in the summer than, like, Arsenal were, and they've gone and spent the money. And I just think, like, we just have to give this guy money, because he's making, like, the two signings that were made in January are, like, really good. And we're not far off. Like, we're gonna finish, like, between, like, anywhere between 6-7 points off, like, top four probably maximum. So we're not going to be far off. So we just need to give him the money. Like, he's definitely the right guy. The system is brilliant.
Yeah, and just to reiterate what Ash just said there, I think I saw a tweet saying, last season, we finished a point behind Arsenal and they spent £150 million in the summer. So really, we're about where we should be and they're about where they should be. And it's just like an indication in summer, we've got to spend, we've got to back Conte. if we want to get back, you know, in line with them.
But why can't we win like two games in a row? This is a big like mystery to me. And like even as inconsistent as we are, that sort of level of like baffling inconsistency. Do you know what I mean? I just don't understand it. Like, we literally can't win two games in a row. What on earth is that about? Like, I was looking at Kane on Saturday thinking, is it you? Because he doesn't seem to be able to have, like, he either has like one amazing game and then a terrible game. And it's like the team follows that pattern.
I think that's a really good point about Kane, actually, because I thought the Conte quote after the previous game, he kind of called Kane out. And a few of the other key players about sort of their consistency, and basically said that, like, it's all well and good winning like 5-0, but you've got to win like at the weekend because it really matters. And we didn't. And I think like that's kind of just like the history of like the club in like the past few years, is that like they win a game and then like the next game becomes like very important for like the long term. And we just don't get the desired result. And I think like, Conte's right. He's like calling out basically the mentality of like not only of the top players, but like the club in general. And I think that's what's been missing for so long, and like why I think he's the correct manager for us.
I think another reason is that we can't rely on our players to stay fit. Like Sessegnon had one of his best games against Everton for us. He's been getting a couple of assists lately, and now he's injured for a month again. And Reguilón comes into the side, and by all accounts, it's a pretty terrible game against Man United. Like, we just don't seem to be able to string, like, we don't have the luck. Or I don't know if it is luck or whatever it is. You know, Conte, I know, has called out our medical team. There's obviously something going on there because it's been terrible for years and years and years. But, like, we need to buy players, like people like Kulusevski, that just come into the team and just play all the time. Like, we can't keep having these players like we've had in the past of, like, Gio and Tongi and, like, Sessegnon, where they come in and out the side, they play 60 minutes, they get subbed off, they get injured, then they get out for a stretch and they come back in. So I think we need to sort that issue as well, because I think Conte is so reliant on the fullbacks, and that's his whole system. That's his whole thing. And I don't know. I think that's our biggest weakness. So hopefully that's something that we want to address in summer as well.
Yeah, I think that's obvious, isn't it? Those, the current sort of wing-back system, the wing-backs in the system aren't up to the job that Conte wants them to do. But I feel like I want to just kind of bring back a little bit of positivity, because I do feel like the last two transfer windows genuinely have been our most successful in years, right? If we're looking at Koulou and Bentancur and Romero. And even though two of those three did not have a good day on Saturday, like Bentancur looked slightly overwhelmed, and Romero obviously just, while he had that kind of hilarious celebration of their own goal, which obviously, yeah, we all enjoyed, like he didn't have a great day. But Koulou really did, again, like, he was really trying to make things happen all the time and didn't look sort of overawed by the situation. But I think even given the sort of two poor performances, like, those are three such solid players that I feel they do give me hope, definitely.
Koulou was really good again, wasn't he? But I do, and this has happened a lot this season because, we're just so up and down. I do feel sort of almost embarrassed that we talked about Doherty maybe being brilliant and solving our right back problem after the Everton game, but he was back to his extremely average self, and as far as I can remember wasn't really linking with Koulou. But Koulou did look excellent again.
Staying on the positivity thing, if you look at our squad, we've got a decent spine now. We've got like Kane, Romero, Skip, Bentancur, Koulou, Son and Kane. There's a lot of quality there. Lloris and goal, sorry, I should have said at the beginning. And Bentancur and Koulou just show what happens when you actually buy quality players. Like, they just come in and make the team better straight away. We've got to get those fullback signings right. We have to do that. Like, that is our number one priority in summer. And I think, you know, as we've been saying on this pod pretty much from day one, we have to get a second striker. Because, as you mentioned, the consistency earlier, I don't think Kane can do it every single game, week in, week out. Certainly not. You know, he's only going to get worse at that because of his age. So I think as long as we keep buying quality players like Koulou and Bentancur, this is what's going to happen. And hopefully, I have total faith in our manager to sort us out next year. So I do think we'll be fine. It's just we have to get that right back signing right. And we have to, you know, if we're going to maybe take a dodge on Cesc or Reguilón, we have to get a left back as well, because fullbacks is everything for Conte. And I don't think I don't really have faith in any of four of our fullbacks at the moment to be like the level that we want to be. So hopefully we'll get that right in summer.
Anyone got anything else to add about the United that they enjoyed or didn't enjoy?
I'm just so sick of seeing like evil win. Do you know what I mean? Like right at the beginning of the game, they said, oh, I think once Ronaldo had got two goals, and the commentator was like, oh, he's only got like what he's only had like one hat trick for United. And I just thought, well, that's obviously going to happen now. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was inevitable. And why does it just always have to be like the most unpleasant player for the most unpleasant club? I'm so sick of it. And I hate just that we gift wrapped it. That's just going to be my last little gripe. It was just like, here you go, have a present. You're welcome. Love, Tottenham Hotspur.
Talking of evil winning as well, obviously it was Chelsea Newcastle yesterday, and sadly they both couldn't lose, and Chelsea won, and oh God, I hate them so much.
It's all right though, because they're just about to be bought out by Saudi Arabian consortium, so you know, that's good news, isn't it, for the love of the game.
Yeah, I'm going to quit. Like, if that happens, I quit football. I'm like, as dramatic as that sounds, I just can't be bothered with it anymore. Like, what's the point, honestly? Like, if they're just going to get away with it and be bought out by someone even worse, really, like, football's finished.
I liked Tom Edwards, who I briefly worked with, who's also a Spurs fan, tweeting earlier about saying that Eddie Howe, Pep, and Tuchel need to just put up with being asked about who's paying their enormous wages. I think Eddie Howe was a bit stroppy when he was asked about the beheadings in Saudi Arabia yesterday. Anyway, it's not Tottenham related. We'll move on.
I think it is great though that I've seen a nickname on Twitter called people calling him Beheady Howe.
Yeah, it's so good.
A great nickname. And that's all we should ever refer to him now from as yeah. Beheady Howe.
That's excellent. That's that's all I'm going to call him, definitely. He's no Bruno Lage anyway, if everyone remembers that. At one point I wanted to be known solely as Bruno Lage. I know we all watched the United game in different places. We mentioned my experience watching the United game earlier on our Twitter account. Just to start the tale, I want to say I hate rugby. Part-time drinkers watching egg chasing in the pub. I was with family in King's Cross on Saturday and wanted to go and find somewhere to watch the game. I ran into, I think, five or six different pubs that were all showing the Six Nations because England were playing at the same time. No one was showing the Spurs game. I got really pissed off. I watched the first half in Wetherspoons in King's Cross Station, which was pretty glamorous on my phone, on the Now TV app on my phone. And then at halftime, I was like, okay, there must be somewhere showing it. Went and looked around the station thinking there might be another pub. And in the end, I watched the second half in Pret in King's Cross Station. It's a good Pret, and I love a Pret. I bought those nice chocolate almonds. But it wasn't an ideal situation to watch the game in, and I probably just should have not watched it at all and stayed with my wife and in-laws. So we asked on Twitter, what unusual places have people watched Spurs in? And we got some good replies, right, Billy?
Yeah, we got absolutely loads. And can I just preface this by saying I was at a wedding on Saturday and I did not watch any of the game whatsoever. And I can't recommend it enough, to be honest. It is absolutely a brilliant way to be a Tottenham fan, is just don't watch any of the games. That is my new way of life, is just don't watch. I haven't seen
this
any of
this. This is what I always try to do, but living with another brilliant Spurs fan means I'm not allowed.
It is absolutely brilliant. I haven't seen a second of Ronaldo like doing anything against us. So it's absolutely fine. And judging by these replies that we've had, I can't believe more people aren't doing it, because some of these are absolutely ridiculous. So I'm going to read them to you now. Okay. So we have got watch Man City, Spurs Man City in a dance tent at Broadmasters at the start of the season using someone else's hotspot. That is brilliant dedication. He said, borrowed my friend's portable TV and watched the 95 semi-final versus Everton at my cousin's christening. So what I can sort of glean from that is you plugged a portable TV in a church and then watched us in a semi-final, which is, you know, a seriously good image to imagine. I watched the City away game seems to be watched by all sorts of people all in all kinds of places. It comes up quite a few times. I watched City away in the Champions League in a hostel bed in Vietnam at 4 a.m. silently exploded when the Llorente goal went in. I watched this, right, this one is, you know, mind-blowing. I watched us play Fulham in hospital as my girlfriend was giving birth to my son. Broke up with her 2 months later and we lost 1-0. Now, I don't want to say karma, but probably might be something to do with the fact that you watched Tottenham during your birth, that you broke up 2 months later, possibly. I watched City away in a strip club in Shoreditch. Again, City away comes up. In a stag do, got kicked out when the winner went in and was going mental. In the airport lounge in Singapore, I was on a school trip to the Philippines and there was a 3-hour layover. What are the chances? I watched the second leg of the Spurs City Champions League, again, City comes up, in a maternity ward with my 6-hour-old son in my arms. Why are we watching Spurs like during pregnancies and births? Like, what are we doing there? Serious dedication. I once watched 90 minutes of pre-season friendly in the toilets at work. I watched it in Afghanistan on Indian satellite TV when I was working for the American forces, basically TV, $30 for 6 months. Again, great dedication. Loads of holidays comes up. Adam Higgsy says he watched it in Magaluf for 2017. We won 6-1 against Leicester. Watched the second leg of the Sheffield. This is Adam Nathan. Watched the second leg of the Sheffield United semi-final in 2015 on an iPad on a toilet in a hotel room in Thailand at 4 a.m. so as not to wake my wife up. And there you go. Watched it in Vegas on the morning of my wedding. We lost again to Burnley. I think a running theme here is people dedicating their lives to watching Tottenham and then losing, which is a lesson we can all learn from, I think. I said, not watching Spurs, but it affects... Now, this is a nightmare that we can all ascribe to because I know this game is lasting long in the memory of all of us. So just been to the playoff final at Wembley, Blackpool at my hometown team. We had lost to West Ham of all sides. Nightmare. And this is where it gets worse. And we were watching Chelsea versus Bayern Munich in the Champions League final whilst on the coach home to find out if we got Champions League the next season. Chelsea went on pens. We got back to Blackpool at 1 a.m. Shit day all round. Now, I don't want to sum up being Tottenham, but, you know. I watched the last 20 minutes through the window of a pub opposite the pub I was in. Right. Now, Steve McGrath has messaged us 3 times here. I'm just going to say, Steve, I think you should stop watching Tottenham on holiday because we watched the second leg versus Juventus in an Irish bar in Rome. Wasn't expecting a room full of Juve fans. I watched the 4-1. This one's a bit better, at least. I watched the 4-1 versus Liverpool at Wembley whilst flying to Vegas to get married. Paid €25 for an awful in-flight Wi-Fi to watch an awful stream, worth every penny. And then had the misery of the League Cup defeat to West Ham a few days later in an Irish bar in Vegas that had 5 or 6 West Ham fans there. And then someone also, I think Dom has sent in a video of himself watching Tottenham in a rave, which again is absolutely crazy. And then we had a really, really special one, to be honest. So I'm just going to dedicate some time to this one because it's really, really important. So a fan called Glebosik Memosik got in touch with us and he said this, which has blown us all away totally. And we're really, really appreciative of him getting in touch. So he said, I've watched Leeds match from a bomb shelter. I'm Ukrainian, by the way. So he, from his location on Twitter, he seems like he's in Kiev. And we just want to say, we want you to stay safe. We're all with you. And we want to send our solidarity from everyone here at Hometown Glory. And we'd love it if you could keep in touch with us throughout this whole ordeal. And we're thinking of you the whole time. So that's Glebosik Memosik in Ukraine. And we just want to send a special Hometown Glory shout out to Ukraine at the moment. So that was a really, really nice one to end on.
Yeah, what an incredible message to get, and some hilarious ones there as well, because I've certainly dragged my wife around some European cities when we've been on holiday to find like the one Irish bar that's showing some shit like Europa League game that we were playing in.
Honestly, though, I do think watching Tottenham on holiday in like Irish bar is like one of the always the best part of the holiday, isn't it?
Like it's quite fun because you get chatting to a load of neutrals who support various European teams, and some of them might even have a soft spot for Spurs. Ash, have you watched any games in weird places on TV?
Nowhere particularly weird that springs to mind, but I have like woken up at like 3 o'clock in the morning in like Bangkok and like walked to a pub to watch Spurs. I think we beat Aston Villa like 3-4-1 or something. I can't remember. But that's one that sticks out for sure.
I think the problem is like now with phones, it's sort of like stopped that kind of weird. You have to go and like hunt down a pub somewhere random. So I feel like the weirdest place probably I've watched it is like, I think my eldest daughter, like her 1 year health review, we were like waiting to go and see if like everything was fine with her, but like watching like the Watford game on Ollie's phone. But I think we won that one, so that feels all right. Yeah, and I've like watched loads of games while like one of my kids is like asleep on me with like the sound down, which to be honest is how I do prefer to watch my football anyway, because most commentary just makes me want to like stab my ears out.
The problem is with phones is that, like you said, it's kind of killed that running around looking for a pub, but it means someone like me ends up in Pret scaring other customers because they could, it was coming back to me because I'd had a few beers, but people were giving me some looks as I shouted to myself in Pret over whilst eating my chocolate almonds.
And if you guys like, what's his problem? Thing? Like, too many to count.
I don't know if you guys have ever done that thing like where you're on a flight and a Tottenham playing at the same time, and it, obviously I've never really been on a flight with Wi-Fi, and you literally can't check your phone because every time I'm out and I'm sort of, you know, I'm thinking, right, I'm going to put my phone away while Tottenham play, I'm not going to check it, and I literally check it every 10 seconds, like refreshing. But when you're on a flight and there's literally no way you can have any sort of inkling of the score, it's quite like, I find it really, really weird for my mental health. I was like, I kept thinking, wonder what's going on now. So I think it's a bit weird, like when you literally, there is no possible connection to Tottenham. It's quite weird in a way. So I've had that a few times on flights, and then you land and like the first thing you do is check like flash score to see that we've lost.
Actually, do you know what? Just thinking about like one of our rare victories at Old Trafford, the AVB one, I didn't watch because I was in Paris doing like a 10-mile run from like Paris to Versailles, which is something I used to do every year. So again, like there was just no way I could like check the score, and then like ended up like just kind of finding my phone like right at the end of it and just thinking, am I like, have I passed out? Because that was like 10 miles, like not a short run. And just not, because I just like put it out of my mind thinking we're just going to go to Old Trafford and lose. And like just thought, am I having like an out of body experience? Am I like super dehydrated, or did we actually win?
Amazing. Run from Paris to Versailles sounds lovely as well. I need to sign up for that.
Oh my god, it's actually amazing. It's really hard work for like the first third, and then like towards the end you're just kind of running through the forest, and then you come out and you're just like running straight towards like the palace, which is like obviously like pretty tacky but also looks pretty impressive, kind of sparkling gold in the sunlight. Yeah, it's something I've been like meaning to go back and do like since I had my kids, but that's still on hold for now.
Sounds lovely and preferable to watching Spurs in most games. Right, let's move on. Rosa, to compound our misery this weekend, Spurs women also lost to Man City yesterday, but we're still above them in the league in fourth place. That's just outside of the Champions League spots, but considering not that long ago we were still in the Women's Championship, it seems pretty good to me. How are you feeling about Spurs women?
Yeah, it's still so good. And they're definitely massively ahead of schedule. It was such a shame because the first half was a really good, solid performance. And then we came back. And I think, unfortunately, Kaia Simon had to go off, and then Rachel Williams went off as well. So like we were even more kind of depleted in attack. And obviously City have a lot of players, and ultimately like the goal was inevitable because we couldn't get out of a half. But then it was one of those things where the actual goal that we conceded was like a horrible scrappy one that was like unnecessary. So that was really gutting. But, you know, again, it's just that thing of just like lacking like firepower, which we already all know. And I think, like the next two games, obviously Chelsea away, Arsenal away, not super hopeful about that. But again, like we've been quite up and down with Spurs women this season. It doesn't really feel like Champions League is going to happen, but again, you just never know. And in the meantime, you know, it was nice to watch the Spurs team playing some kind of like competent, but also pretty gutsy football. Like they really did like try, and it wasn't even as if we didn't have chances either. So like a point was there for the taking, not a very likely point, but it could have happened. So you never know. So I feel sort of, you know, the thing to remember is that they are way, way, way ahead of schedule. And I think with just some additions over the summer, like they'll definitely be challenging next year.
Well, I'm sad to realise that as if Spurs teams haven't played Chelsea enough this season, we're playing them again. I don't think that game's until the 23rd, although I am also torn about Spurs playing Chelsea because it seems a good opportunity to boo them. And I'm quite disappointed we're not still in the FA Cup to, you know, whatever. I actually wouldn't care if we lost again to Chelsea, just if I like got the chance to boo them for 90 minutes. That'd be great.
Yeah, I'd feel pretty good about that, to be honest. And I feel slightly like, I know that Emma Hayes, the Chelsea women's coach, has like done amazing things, but it's sort of slightly weird to see her kind of say stuff about like, oh, I love my team. Like this group of players is amazing. Like we just fight for our club. Like this week, I don't know if now's the time to be saying that sort of thing, Emma. Do you know what I mean? Just a reminder that like, you know, I guess women can be evil too.
Seeing reports and people saying, you know, it's been a really tough week for Chelsea. I'm like, is it compared to the tough week some other people around the world are having? I don't know.
The Chelsea fan meltdown has been delicious. It's true. Yeah. Like, I think we should probably take a moment to appreciate that, because even if they are going to be like saved in the end and it's not going to make a difference, like we have all enjoyed this week. It's been amazing, right?
My favourite thing was like Frank Lampard saying, oh, I've only met him like four times, but it's nothing to do with me, honestly. It's like, yeah, all right, Frank, mate, okay. He's like, I can count the amount of times I've met him on one hand.
Well, and just days before, John Terry had posted that photo of him and Roman, like, God.
Which is still up, by the way. He still hasn't deleted it.
He still hasn't deleted it.
Yeah. At least he doesn't pretend that he's evil, unlike Lampard, who sort of tries to give the impression that he isn't.
Yeah. Lampard does try to be a nice guy. It was really fun, that Everton game, watching him in the dugout. Right. Looking forward to the rest of the week. We've got two more games. We don't draw games, so surely we beat Brighton and lose to West Ham, and you all know how I feel about West Ham. Brighton are on a pretty bad run of form, but of course anything can happen. Billy, I know you're a big Lamptey fan. What would you change in terms of our team, our lineup, and our tactics for this one?
I don't know what I would change, because I think we're like threadbare at the moment. Like, it's, you know, you would look at, we can't change Reggie on, we can't. You can't really bring Emerson into the team. Like, he's so poor at the moment. I think we'll stick with pretty much the same team that we've done. And I'm okay with that, to be honest. I do think that team will be enough to beat Brighton. Again, central midfield, we don't really have many options. You might maybe see Wink start, maybe. I could see that happening, possibly. But we just don't really have a big enough squad to even rotate players at the moment, which is a concern. What I think might be interesting is if maybe Bergwijn got a run out, he might deserve that. Because Son has been sort of inconsistently to poor, I would say, over the last few games. But again, he doesn't really seem to ever get a look in Bergwijn anymore. Like, he hasn't started since, like, I can't even remember. It must be a cup game or something since he started in. So I think that's the only change we may see. I can't see him bringing Emerson, maybe Winks and Bergwijn, maybe. But I think it'd be interesting, the Brighton game, because it hopefully be a good opportunity to see, like, what fullbacks should be like, because I think they've got two really decent fullbacks, like Cocorella and Lamptey, two really good players. I would take both of them in a heartbeat. But I think we should beat them, really. And I think I'm kind of now doing the mental gymnastics in my head, because I've just seen that, like, Crystal Palace just drawn to Man City. It should mean that Liverpool are really fired up to beat Arsenal. So hopefully it'll be a good day for us tomorrow, I think. Hopefully, you know, we'll win, Arsenal will lose.
Did we not keep their fullbacks pretty quiet in the cup game?
Yeah, I think they both had a pretty poor game against us, which is good. Yeah, I think Lamptey had a pretty poor game against us. I think Romero absolutely smashed him at one point, and then I think that was sort of the last that we saw of him in that game. So, yeah, hopefully it'll be the same again.
It was Bissouma that was the big problem, wasn't he? Yeah.
But I still love you, Tarek Lamptey, and I will always love you.
Ash, I can't bear to talk too much about West Ham, so... tell us how you're feeling about the next two, generally, Brighton and West Ham.
I feel fine about it because we're so inconsistent. I just never know what's going to happen. And the first 11 is really good. So I think, like Billy said, like keep it the same. Hope no one gets injured. Pray that Skip comes back. I don't know what's happened to him. Is he alive? I haven't heard anything about him yet.
He's due back end of the month, apparently. But you know my theory that he's just not, we're not going to see him again this season.
How are you out for like 3 months with an infection? Like what, how that could only happen to a Tottenham player? Like,
I know. What
footballer gets an infection in their thigh and then they're out for like 4 months? Like, what is going on?
Yeah, it's quite weird because Skip and sort of Romero are two of our better players and we've barely seen them all season. It's completely bizarre. So, that's like something that definitely gives me like a lot of hope actually moving forward that like these few players that are decent, like we've barely seen them. But I'm really looking forward to the West Ham game because I don't think I've been to a West Ham Spurs game at the new stadium yet. And I'm just like looking forward to just like the atmosphere and vibe like in there. Hopefully it should be like really good. So yeah.
It was the last game I think I went to before my second daughter was born, and it was a 1-0. It was an absolute mugging. It was a horrendous evening.
It was our first loss in the new stadium, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Antonio.
Our first league loss, yeah.
Yeah.
We'd already lost to Ajax, which I was also at. Yeah. I feel quite relieved because it's my daughter's fifth birthday party on Sunday, and I didn't even do it on purpose this time. Like, I'm just not, like I said, let's book it on Sunday so that, you know, we've got Saturday to kind of fully get our act together and get all the extra bits we needed. And I genuinely forgot that we were playing West Ham that day. So I'm not even avoiding it on purpose. It's just like a natural, beautiful thing that's happened.
Listen, don't you learn from the mistakes of the hundreds of people that have messaged us, and don't watch it on your phone. Like in the toilet.
There's no way.
Birthday. Just don't watch it. Paris to Versailles, and we will win. We'll win it if you
exactly.
Don't
I'm going to block it out.
Just enjoy, let it go, and we don't talk about Bruno and happy by Pharrell and ignore that the game is on.
Exactly. Just enjoy my life.
Yeah. I think also, West Ham have got to play this Thursday, haven't they? The second leg of their Europa League game against Seville. And they lost the away leg. So fingers crossed they all get exhausted on Thursday. And also Bowen is out, I think. And he was on a brilliant run. So that's good news.
I think Antonio went off injured, didn't he, against whoever they beat at the weekend? I think so. So that could be good as well. I know we've been saying this on the podcast what seems like the last 2 or 3 months, but I think we're going to win both of these games. I really do. So 6 points. See where we are after that. Could be back in it. Who knows? Let's hope.
That's that done then. We're going to lose now. Both games.
I feel like I'm quite relaxed. You know, we're going to win one. We're going to lose one. I think that's fine. I think.
Look, Charlie's not here as well because Charlie, let's not forget, he made the prediction that we would smash Southampton. We would thrash Southampton, I think, was his call. And there's at least another one where he's been extremely confident that it was all going to go really well. So sorry, Charlie, but we're glad you're not here to curse us.
I'm just going to say as well, do you remember drawing games? Do you remember what that used to be like? We haven't done that. We haven't done it in 2022. Our last draw was in on the 28th of December against Southampton. Like, I wouldn't mind a couple draws now and then, is all I'm saying. If we're going to lose like literally every other game, just take that one draw from now and then just to stop that ridiculous run that we're on.
Yeah, did
I? Do you remember we did that in our last season at Wembley, though? Do you remember? Like, we didn't, like, our
Wasn't
last,
like, literally our record, last,
I think so. And our last game at Wembley was the North London Derby, which we drew.
I think we have like a Premier League record of going the most games without drawing. I think that was under Poch at Wembley. I think you're right.
Yeah. I mean, it feels about right for Tottenham, doesn't it, really? Just like nothing in the middle, just all over the place.
I think we've lost 17 games this season. Is that right?
Yeah, I saw that on Twitter, yeah. I think all competitions, yeah.
Yeah.
I think we've lost 5 league games in 2022, which is pretty crazy. But we're going to win the next two, so it's all right.
All right, Billy, we're going to carry your confidence into the next 7 days. Right, let's get on to the least stressful part of the show. Let's talk our culture picks. And Ash, tell us what you've been listening to, watching, enjoying in the past week.
Yeah, so like there's been quite a few good albums that have come out lately. So there's like Central Cee, Diplo, Koji Radical, Robert Glasper, Stromae. But the album that like stood out to me was the Benny the Butcher album, which came out on Friday. I think it's called Tana Talk 4. And it's just like a very like gritty New York boom bap like hip hop album. And yeah, it's great. Like I think he puts out an album every like 3 weeks, it seems. There's always a new sort of like Griselda, Benny the Butcher album, but generally this one's really good. And it just sort of like stood out amongst like the various albums that like I've listened to lately. So I definitely recommend that.
Nice. I'll have a listen to that, Ash. Thank you. Ash always has great music picks. I've been enjoying the Koji Radical album as well. I'll be honest. I really like Koji. But both him and Little Sims are very Kendrick influenced, I think. There's like so much that they take from Kendrick. So it's listening to Koji earlier today made me also yearn for the return of Kendrick. And he's headlining festivals this summer. So surely we'll get that new music very soon. While I'm talking, I also really enjoyed the return of The Misadventures of Romesh Ranganathan. I know this, it's not like a particularly left field pick or something that people don't know about, but he's obviously extremely funny. But in this one of his many TV shows, it's this kind of travel log show. He goes to unexpected destinations. Obviously, COVID put the show on hold for a while, but he's previously done episodes in Zimbabwe and Haiti. And the latest episode was in Sierra Leone. And he can do funny, but he genuinely tackles some quite serious issues in a very tender, interesting, kind of enlightening way in that show as well. Anyway, that first episode of the new series is on iPlayer. Rosa, tell us something or some things, some choices for you. What have you been listening to and watching lately?
Well, I went to see the Louise Bourgeois exhibition at the Hayward Gallery this weekend, which was very, very, very cool. So obviously she's the woman who does all the like giant spider sculptures. And this only had one of those in because it was about the work that she'd done in sort of the last two decades of her life, where she was more interested in kind of using sort of fabric and textiles. But it was all just fascinating, really. Some really like big pieces and then some also quite small. She like there was one room that I really loved where she'd made just kind of little sort of dolls of like pregnant women and then little babies. I don't know, it was just kind of very moving, really. And a really nice one of like a sort of torso with like a little baby figure kind of resting very gently on it, which if you have kind of had children or just cuddled children and had them lie on you, just felt very sort of real, even though it was just a kind of stuffed model. And then yeah, she did have one of those sort of giant spider sculptures, which was also like massively impressive. Loads of children at that exhibition, which I found quite weird because aside from the sort of mother room, like some of it's quite like explicit. So I was a bit like, is this that appropriate? Like lots of like school age kids just kind of sketching things. But anyway, you know, I guess parents can do whatever. And then on a Sunday night, I started watching the... oh my God, is it, which Coen brother is it? Joel or Ethan, who just did the version of Macbeth? It's Joel, right?
I think it's Joel. I'm pretty sure
yeah,
it's Joel.
Yeah.
The other one's retired, right?
Yeah, I don't know if he's retired or they're just not, like, this is just his first sort of solo effort. So I'm only halfway through that, but so it's with Denzel Washington as Macbeth and Frances McDormand as Lady Macbeth and Brendan Gleeson as Duncan. So it's obviously got like a wildly impressive cast. It's got that sort of Coen Brothers very kind of like stagey theatrical feel to it. It's all in black and white, but it's very kind of stark and all the lines are really sharp. It's quite an interesting thing to watch at this kind of present moment, really, because it's a very kind of sparse staging. So there's sort of no obvious reason for anybody to want to like acquire more power. You know, there's no like, there's not a lot of people, there's not a lot of like ornaments or money or anything. Do you know what I mean? There's nothing. Yeah, there's no obvious kind of kingdom. It's all pretty bleak. So it's just kind of power for its own sake, which is a sort of interesting thing, I think, to think about in this kind of particular moment where you're sort of watching a one madman kind of push the world to the brink, really, and you sort of think, there's no kind of real way of like properly being able to understand that. But on a lighter note, it's just always really fun to watch performers like Denzel Washington and Frances McDormand kind of do what they do best. They're just brilliant. It's a real thrill. So yeah, like I said, I'm only halfway through that because I simply cannot watch one film in one single setting ever at the moment. So like, I assume the rest of it will be good. We'll see how it turns out.
Your mention of Louise Bourgeois also reminded me that I need to get to the Oof Gallery at the Spurs Stadium. And they just announced a new joint exhibition. Martin Parr, the amazing photographer, and Corbin Shaw, kind of split exhibition, which opens 18th of March and goes on till the 8th of May. I've been meaning to go to the gallery for ages, but getting just to a game from South London takes long enough, so I need to factor in some extra time to see that, but that sounds really cool. Billy, tell us what you've been watching, presumably like hundreds and hundreds of films.
Yeah, I have. I'll talk about one of them in a second, but I'm amazed you didn't beat me to this, Tom, actually. I was so sure you're going to say it. Is the Neo Archives EP. Oh, it's so good. It just came out on Friday. Forbidden Feelings, it's called. I think it's got six tracks on it. Yeah, six tracks. And it's just so good. I think, honestly, I know we mentioned her on a few times before, but I think she's just like one of the best things to come out of the UK in ages. I think she's going to be a superstar. I think this EP is like really, really promising. Have you guys liked that one as well? You listened to it yet? It's really, really good. It's got 18 and Over on it, obviously, which has been a single before, but it's got some other really good tracks as well. So yeah, I'm loving that one.
Yeah, so I still haven't listened to it, but I love her. And 18 and Over is like one of my favorite tracks of the last few months for sure. She's so cool and just like that amazing, like she's got a really soulful voice, and then there's the jungle thing, really nice mix of genres.
Yeah, and I've seen a couple of videos of her online. I think Ash put them in the group chat, actually, like when she's DJing, and like I need to see her DJ. She like sings at the same time. Like she is just a ridiculously talented person. But yeah, I really need to see her live. And then the other one, again, which I think Ash has seen as well, be interested to hear his thoughts, is The Batman. Obviously not like a left field recommendation or anything, because it's like the biggest selling field in the world at the moment, but I absolutely loved it. I'm obviously a big fan of the Dark Knight trilogy, kind of wondering how anyone would follow that up. And it feels like that trilogy was like released like last year or the last couple of years, because it's like stayed relevant and people always like share memes of it and whatever. And it feels like it was really recent. It was actually 10 years ago since we had a Batman film, which is crazy really. So this was like in the wake of that, and like how do you step out of that shadow? But I think they've managed to do it, to be honest. I think it's a really, really, really good representation of Batman. Like, I love the detective stuff, and even though I like Rose, I'm a big advocate of the 90-minute film maximum scene, this was 3 hours, like literally 3 hours, which is crazy, but I didn't feel it. I was not bored at any point. I managed to sit through it, which I think is the biggest compliment I can pay to it. Yeah, I absolutely loved it, and I've thought about it pretty much all day ever since I saw it last week. So yeah, I really, really love that. Can't wait to see what they do next. Ash, you weren't as big a fan, right, of it?
I just can't do 3 hours, mate. it's too long for me. I can't do it. But no, it is decent though. But yeah, like I think 2 hours is like my absolute like peak limit to be sat in the cinema and like still being able to pay attention. But I like how dark it is. And yeah, I am excited to see the next one. And it's great just like having Zoe Kravitz on screen at all times. I'm very much for that. So yeah, less length, more Zoe is what they should aim for on number two.
Is she in it loads?
Yes.
Okay, good. Because otherwise I'm not going to bother. Yeah, because I'm not having that whole like, you know, Zendaya in June situation.
Yeah, it's much better. She has much better screen time than that. And one of the things I really liked as well is like the club scenes actually look like a club scene. Like I think they filmed it in Printworks in London. And they have like actual proper decent music in them. Like you normally the music that you get in these club scenes and films are so bad, but I think like Peggy Goo is on the soundtrack and like Patrick Topping is on the soundtrack and people like that. So when they're in a club, it actually feels like they're actually in a club, not in like some staged thing where everyone's like dancing how no one would ever dance in real life. So that was really cool.
I actually noticed that like really stood out, the fact that like the club like element just looked really cool.
I didn't clock there was Printworks till afterwards. I was just looking up who the song was by and I realised it's Peggy Goo. And then, yeah, so apparently they filmed it in London in Printworks, which is pretty cool.
Is he a good Batman? Like, while I like the Nolan trilogy, I don't really enjoy Christian Bale. Like, my personal favourite Batman is Michael Keaton.
I think, from what I gather online, like most of the real Batman nerds are really happy with it. I think it's like really true to the comics. He's basically like an emo teenager. At one point he literally tells Andy Serkis, "You're not my real dad." Like he's basically just a teenager, like, and he wears like makeup and stuff. So yeah, I think it's really, really true to the comics. I think The Dark Knight is like untouchable, but I do think Robert Pattinson is a really, really good Batman. I mean, I think Michael Keaton is reprising it soon, isn't he? This year in the Green Lantern or whatever it's called. I'm not a massive DC fan or know much about it, but I think he's back this year as Batman too.
I just really love Michael Keaton. I think he's such an interesting actor and always has been.
Guys, justice for Val Kilmer, please. I'm the only person in the world who doesn't like Christopher Nolan films particularly. I quite like the first one in his trilogy. The rest was just fucking droning on. Hans Zimmer's score, Christian Bale being quite annoying, Tom Hardy incomprehensible. So take me back to the Joel Schumacher films, please, with Val Kilmer.
And what I really liked about this one is it's basically just Goodfellas in Gotham. It's like they proper lean into like the gangster crime element of it, which is, you know, that's what I live for. So yeah, that was well good.
The world definitely needs like another gritty Batman. Like we just haven't had enough of that.
Guys, we need a camp Batman again. We need George Clooney or Val Kilmer. We need Robin. Chris O'Donnell?
Chris O'Donnell.
Shout out Lego Batman as well. Lego Batman is what we need to go back to.
I still need to see that.
That is fucking brilliant, to be fair.
On that note, right. Lego Batman. We've covered Man United, watching games in prayer, Lego Batman, Chelsea, the war in Ukraine. It's been an emotional one. Thank you so much, Ash, Rosa and Billy. Don't worry, Charlie will be back soon. We hope. I'm sure he will. Though he does curse us every time he predicts that we're going to thrash someone. We'll be back soon. Billy, please see us out.
Just want to say this week, fuck Chelsea Football Club and up the Spurs.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.